and welcome to The Laydown, a podcast where three booksellers from Gibson's Bookstore in Concord, New Hampshire, chat about all things literary. My name is Ryan.
I'm Hillary.
And I'm Kelso.
Hi, friends. How's it going?
It is going. It is March. I have lost an hour of my life, but I'm good.
An hour of reading time. Gone.
Yep.
Gone with daylight savings.
All I could think about was that part in Princess Bride all day. We have taken an hour from your life. How does that make you feel?
Oh, it's true. Mm-hmm. It's true. But I am looking forward to more daylight in the evenings. That will be nice. But yes, it was when we're recording this, today was daylight savings day, so we all lost an hour of sleep last night. So I'm tired.
Me too. I was just saying, I'm ready for my nap. Actually, I'm just ready to go to bed.
Yeah.
With a good book.
Yes. What have you all been reading recently, or what are you excited to start reading?
I am reading The Secret to Superhuman Strength by Alison Bechdel, who is the author of Fun Home and Dykes to Watch Out For, is the creator of the Bechdel test.
Yeah.
This is a graphic memoir about her obsession with fitness and exercise and all of the fitness and fads. But it's also, of course, if you've ever read any of her work, it's way more than just her memoir about her lifetime obsession with all kinds of like running and skiing and sports. It's also about nature and transcendentalism and Buddhism and the nature of her life and what it means to be a soul in a body. And I like her work anyways, but I feel like this is kind of up there with Fun Home in that it's so thought-provoking and good. And it's about 240 pages, and it's, you know, it's a graphic novel. Mm-hmm. So it's mostly pictures. but I wanna at once race through it, but also stop and think about it, because it's not really a book you need to race through. She's just really profound. I think this is going to be some of her best work. She talks about getting older because she's now in her 60s. And it's funny to see, like, one of the things that she talks about, because she talks about New England in here. She talks about New England in here as this magical, mysterious place that she wanted to go to because she grew up in Pennsylvania. This is a fantastic book. I can't wait for everybody to read it. I already have a lot of friends who have pre-ordered it, and they were like, I didn't even know she was coming out with something. And I'm like, yeah, so good. So Secret to Superhuman Strength by Alison Bechdel, May 4th. Can't wait.
May 4th.
And that's what I'm reading right now.
Nice. Hillary, what are you reading? Or what are you excited about?
Well, let's see. The one book, I guess, that is not in, it does have to do with our topic for today, which is nonfiction or things that are not fiction. But this one is about to come out in May as well. And this book is terrific. It's called We Need New Stories, The Myths That Subvert Freedom by Nesreen Malik. Nesreen Malik is a woman who is, I believe she's Sudanese originally, and she lives in London now. Award-winning British Sudanese columnist and features writer for The Guardian. And she started writing, thinking about this book when Donald Trump got elected. And it's basically how we have all of these mythologies in our societies that keep us from seeing the truth of what's really happening right in front of us. So she breaks it down into several different myths. And they are the myth of the reliable narrator, the myth of a political correctness crisis, the myth of the free speech crisis, the myth of harmful identity politics, the myth of national exceptionalism, and the myth of gender equality. Huh. So you can see where this is going. It is very much taking to task sort of the Fox Newses of the world, who are constantly claiming that anything that challenges the power of ruling privilege it is somehow attacking the best societal values and mores that we have. And the myth of the reliable narrator, for example, the very first chapter is all about how the people who write news, journalists, are mostly white men. And for years have refused to hear that there weren't enough Black or people of color in newsrooms. There weren't enough women in newsrooms. And so issues that really matter were underreported. The second one, the myth of political correctness crisis, you know, this whole thing about cancel culture that nobody can shut up about. The myth of a free speech crisis, like that, oh, people are being kept from speaking out on Facebook because they're saying harmful things and there's a need to stop them from spreading harmful things. Mm-hmm. It's a terrific book. It's not a hard read. It's an easy read. And it's a really good read if you are tired of people in your life saying, oh, you're just canceling me because I said mean things about Mexican Americans. You know, I mean, I have family members who say stuff like that to me. Yeah. Excellent. Nice. Book coming out in May.
Awesome. I am, as always, I'm reading like a million different things. And also I'm looking at a stack of books that I have been meaning to read. But the one that I think I'm going to pick up next, because a couple of my bookseller friends have read it and they're raving about it. It's called My Heart is a Chainsaw. It's by Stephen Graham Jones, and it comes out in August, end of August. And I don't know anything about it except that I know that I like Stephen Graham Jones and people are loving it. One of my bookseller friends is literally reading it again already. She's reading it from the second time already. So
what has he written?
He wrote recently The Only Good Indians.
Oh, okay. Yes. All yeah. right. I know who this is. Ooh. Is it gonna be as creepy as The Only Good Indian?
I think so, based on the cover.
So is it horror?
I think so. I honestly don't
you're
know
nodding,
that much
yes.
about it. But
yeah, they already read it. It's very creepy and it's very good, and I will not divulge anything else, but it is creepier than Only Good Indians.
Yeah, I'm excited to jump into it because it's getting really good reviews. So that is My Heart is a Chainsaw, and that comes out in August. And I could talk, you know, for years about all the other books that I have started and not finished yet, but we'll save that for future podcast episodes. Let's jump into our topic of the month of the episode. I was noticing that, well, the three of us do read very different things. We also often will find ourselves reading the same things. You know, we all read Plain Bad Heroines. We read a lot of sci-fi fantasy. We read a lot of queer lit, things like that. And I started to think about how we don't often find ourselves talking about things outside of like sci-fi fantasy or literary fiction. Like sometimes we'll throw in, you know, Hillary usually has some nonfiction in her picks, but we don't often spend a lot of time talking about things other than fiction. So I thought today we could focus a little bit on anything but fiction, because I'm sure we have listeners who don't read exclusively fiction, and it might be nice to look at some of the other genres that fill our bookstore. So I was looking through, because I am definitely a reader who I find a comfort zone and I stay there for a long time in my little bubble. For a long time, I would only read young adult. And then I expanded that a little bit. And then I would only read psychological thrillers. And then I would only read horror. So like, I get very obsessive about a genre, and I might, you know, sample here and there outside of that, but I often, you know, come back to my genre of the moment. And so I was like, oh no, I'm not going to have anything to talk about because I never read nonfiction. And then I was looking through a lot of my recent reads, and I actually do read nonfiction. I just forget about it. So I picked out a few that I wanted to just like highlight. And some of these I've talked about on the podcast before, but they are just ones that I really enjoyed. So if there are listeners who are like me, who don't tend to stray from their little bubbles of fiction, you might enjoy these. They're fun. So, you know, I have to start with Hamilton. You know, I have to start with Hamilton. It brings it back full circle. So both the Alexander Hamilton biography by Ron Chernow and Hamilton the Revolution, or as we call it, the Hamiltome, by Jeremy McCarter and Lin-Manuel Miranda, which is the book about the Broadway show. Both of these, highly recommend. They're very, very different, obviously. One is a biography and one is about a Broadway show, but they're both awesome. Alexander Hamilton by Ron Chernow. I am not a big biography reader. I will read a biography if it's about someone I really respect and admire, or if I think it's going to be funny, or like maybe a little bit scary. I might delve into that. But in general, I'm not a history person. I don't read a lot of history, but I wanted to read the Hamilton biography before I saw Hamilton on Broadway a few years ago. And it was daunting, right? It's a big, thick book. And I knew like this guy led a life, right? So I actually did the audiobook of it. And I highly recommend, if you are reading outside of your comfort zone, this is one of those times when like, I mean, I always am going to hype up audiobooks because I love them. But in particular, if you're reading outside of your comfort zone, because Ron Chernow writes in such a way that it feels like you're just having a conversation with him and he's just geeking out about the subject of his book. Like he's just geeking out about Hamilton and just wants to tell you all these great stories about Hamilton that he just happens to know. Like that's kind of how his books read. And that comes across so well in the audiobooks. You know, he's written one on Washington, one on Hamilton, one on Grant, like, and they're always these huge books, but they are so conversational and so easily digestible, even when it's this really big, daunting history. And I sat down and I popped my headphones in and I just like felt like I was hanging out with Uncle Ron and he was just telling me stories about his buddy Hamilton. It was really fun. And then it was nice because then when I did go, I did get to see it on Broadway with some of the original cast. And I had them sign that. I had them sign my copy of Hamilton as opposed to like my playbill or whatever. And it was really cute because the night that I saw it, Javi was Hamilton that night. And I handed it to him and he goes, are you sure? Are you sure I can sign this? Where do you want me to sign it? I've never signed this before. Are you sure? This is legit. Are you sure? it was very cute. So I got Javier signed it. Chris Jackson, who played Washington, signed it. David Diggs signed it. and Leslie Odom Jr. signed it. And so my giant copy of Alexander Hamilton is displayed in my home.
That's very cool. I agree with you about that audiobook. That audiobook is excellent. And you know how you can tell an audiobook was really great? Is if you can see in your mind's eye where you were driving as you were listening to it. Yeah. And I remember clearly being on the Henry Hudson Parkway in the bright sunlight, listening to Hamilton and being like, I don't know if I should be driving while I'm listening to this because I'm not paying attention to the road.
Yeah, absolutely. I can absolutely picture like where I was sitting, like on my couch, what I was looking at while I was listening, because I was just like so into it. And then, of course, Hamilton the Revolution, or the Hamiltome. Any fan of the Broadway show, if you do not already have this book, you need this book. I am definitely a proponent of Broadway books. Like, I have The Grimmery from Wicked. I have a few others. If I really love a Broadway show, I will go get the book that has, you know, the history of the show and photographs and lyrics. Like, I love it. And this is no different. It is, I sat down and read it cover to cover. It goes through the entire, from conception to reality, the making of the show. It's got gorgeous photographs. In the back, it has the lyrics of the show annotated by Lin-Manuel Miranda. It's phenomenal. And that's another one. I read it cover to cover, and then I also downloaded the audiobook and listened to it because I just couldn't get enough of it. And that was really fun too. And that was one of the few times when, so like I normally listen to my audiobooks at a faster speed because my brain goes at a faster speed, so it doesn't bother me to listen to them quickly. And then I get through more quickly. I actually had to slow it down to normal speed when it got to the part where Lin was doing the annotations on the lyrics, because he speaks so quickly anyway that when it got to, it was like 1.5 speed and I just couldn't, I was like, what is he saying? I actually had to slow it down, which was very funny. That does not happen often. So highly recommend those two. I have definitely, if you have come into Gibson's and casually mentioned that you like Hamilton and were like maybe wondering if we had any Hamilton stuff, I have probably shoved this book at you. Even if you weren't asking me about it, if I heard you from across the store say something about Hamilton, I probably ran up to you with this book. It is beautiful. Highly recommend.
We did it in our book club.
That's right. My copy still has all of my sticky notes in it from all of the things that I wanted to talk about in that book club. It is, there are lots of fun facts. and then a couple other ones that I just wanted to talk about a little bit. So Running with Sherman by Chris McDougall. Listeners of the pod may remember that way back in our first year of the podcast, Chris McDougall was one of my first interviews. He was the first one where his publicist actually reached out to me and asked if I wanted to chat with him on the podcast. So he's in our very first Halloween episode because that was the timing. And we talked about his book, Running with Sherman, which is such a fun book. If you are someone who is into running, or is into farm animals, or is curious about the Amish, this is the book for you. So Chris McDougall lives in Amish country. He is not Amish, but he lives in Amish country in Pennsylvania. And he has a farm. His family has a farm. And this is a book about this donkey that they adopted named Sherman, who is crazy because he's a donkey and all donkeys are crazy. And this book is about Chris trying to train this donkey to run with him because he like learned that this was a thing that people go like running with donkeys. It's this whole like race of the burros. Like he was like, I want to do that with Sherman. And it is funny. It is sweet. It is a story about family and redemption, and it's really, really good, really compelling book. And it just makes you want to just like hug Sherman, because when they adopted him, he was he had been horribly neglected, and they had to do all kinds of therapy with him. And now he is just like living his best life, and he is just running that farm all by himself. It is hysterical. He's the best. So highly recommend that. And also that interview back from our first season. Go listen to that. When we recorded that, we were going to do it via Zoom.
Oh, I remember this.
And I logged in and nothing, he wasn't there. And I'm waiting and waiting and waiting. And finally the bookstore gets a phone call from Chris, and he says, "Hey, so there was a blizzard a couple of days ago, and we still have no power or Wi-Fi or anything. What do I do?" So I sent him my prepared questions, and he recorded his answers as if I had asked them directly. And then I Frankensteined the interview together. I recorded myself asking the questions and then Frankensteined it together so that it sounded as though we were having a face-to-face conversation, but we were not. So that was a fun little interview. And then I also want to talk, and I think I have talked about this one on the podcast, but Disney's Land by Richard Snow.
Yeah.
Oh, I love this book. And here's why. I am a huge Disney fan. Huge. We go every couple of years. I grew up going to Disney. My uncle Bill has written books about Disney. They're called Mouse Junkies, if you're curious. I love Disney so much. And this book, I actually listened to the audio of this book on the plane on the way to Walt Disney World to run the Dopey Challenge in January of 2020, before everything shut down, which the Dopey Challenge is takes place over 4 days. You do a 5K and then a 10K and then a half marathon and then a marathon. And I did that. I got a little more than halfway through the marathon before I had to stop because I was highly dehydrated and also pregnant at the time. So I got most of the way through the Dopey Challenge. I'll probably do it again at some point because I really want to finish it. But this book it's all about Disneyland, and it's from, again, sort of like conception to reality to the like opening of Disneyland. And it really focuses a lot on like those first couple of weeks at Disneyland, particularly opening day. I mean, anything that could possibly go wrong was going wrong. Like this book, I was crying laughing at some of the just ridiculous things that happened at opening day. I mean, and a lot of Disney fans will know a lot of these stories, things like, you know, the tar in the park, they had just finished paving it right before opening. And then it was so hot that it was melting and women's shoes were getting stuck. Right. So like people will know that, you know, there were no like water fountains because someone had hooked up the water pipes or whatever incorrectly. And so they basically were like, "Hey, Walt, you can either have bathrooms or water fountains." And he was like, "Well, we have to have bathrooms. People can buy drinks. I'd rather they be able to use the bathrooms." But of course, this became a PR nightmare because then everyone was like, "Ah, there's no water fountains because he's forcing you to buy soda." And it was like, "Well, no, we just wanted you to be able to use the bathrooms." But there are also like just hilarious stories that I personally had never heard. And, you know, things like, hoses being connected incorrectly so that a sprinkler was suddenly spraying out like Coca-Cola or something, you know, like there was like a woman asked someone where the bathrooms were, and because Disney is so deeply themed so that nothing, you know, bathrooms don't necessarily look like bathrooms, right? Because you don't want to be walking by and see a huge restroom sign. You want to be like in the theming. And so she asked where the bathroom was, and the cast member pointed to the bathroom, and she didn't recognize it as a bathroom. So she went and just squatted behind a bush because that's what she thought they were pointing to. Things like the ferry boat just started sinking. Like the most hilarious, like everything that could go wrong went wrong. But it's also, you know, all of the wholesome, wonderful stories as well about Walt creating Disneyland and all this fun stuff. And so if you are a Disney adult like I am, you have to read this book. It is so much fun. It is so sweet and silly, and just it gave me just extra appreciation for the parks. Yeah, so that's pretty much what I wanted to talk about, were those like sort of little bit of history, a little bit of bio, but with, you know, kind of a personal flair. It's like, like when I do drift into nonfiction, I still am very much me. I'm still listening to Hamilton, Disney. Like I find ones that are very close to my heart. What about you guys? What kinds of nonfiction have you read that you want to share with our listeners?
I have read surprisingly a lot of nonfiction, and I didn't think about it until you brought this up and I was looking at my bookshelf and thinking about books that I had read in my life or they really stuck with me. And I was like, yeah, I surprisingly read a lot of nonfiction. Most of the nonfiction that I used to read was a lot of true crime nonfiction. And I read a lot of goofy math books, I guess is a good way to put them. One of the goofy math books that I read, especially recently, was Humble Pie, When Math Goes Wrong in the Real World by Matt Parker.
It's Pi Day today.
Today is also Pi Day. That's yes, right.
As we're recording this, happy Pi Day.
it's called Humble Pie, P-I, like the mathematical symbol. It's called Where Math Goes Wrong in the Real World. Matt Parker is a British comedian, but he also has a PhD in mathematics. Mm-hmm. He also wrote this book a few years ago, which I've talked about on the podcast before, which is Things to Make and Do in the Fourth Dimension.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yep.
This book is about how math goes wrong in the real world and how goofy things can happen and how tragic things can go. When math is not done correctly and math needs to be respected, but he does it in a hilarious kind of stand-up way. The first part of this book, he talks about a gentleman who purchased a $20 million jet with $70,000 in Pepsi points back in 1984. They talk about the law of large, really big numbers where our brains cannot conceptualize how big a number actually is. So yeah. Back in the 80s, when they started doing Pepsi points, there was a joke in the commercial where this kid flew into school on a jet and you could get it for, you know, a million Pepsi points. And you could have bought Pepsi points for 10 cents each. So he calculated how much he had to make in actual dollars in order to get enough points to buy the jet. And he took he took Pepsi to court because they were like, we're not giving this to you. And his lawyers were like, well, it's stated in your contract here in the sweepstakes rules that legally you're telling us no, we're gonna sue you. So it's a bunch of like goofy stuff like that. It's super good. One of my other favorite things is why you should never name your child null, test, or sample. Because it's going to make programming anything for HR a nightmare for them because of the way programming bugs work. Yeah. he was telling us that the next Y2K will hit at 3:14 a.m. on January 19th, 2038, which is ironically a Tuesday. The reason for that, you'll have to go and read the book. It's fabulous. It's great. He talks about engineering and science in there as well. If you want to get into math, or you know a person who's really kind of a big old nerd like yours truly, but like never did really well in math class, this is kind of the book for you. It's like, if you really like astrophysics for people in a hurry, it's that type of book. It's pretty layman's terms.
It's making me think of Thing Explainer.
Yes.
By Randall Munroe. That very sort of like really epic concepts boiled down for the average human.
For the MFAs among us. The other things that I would think about are books that I read that really stuck with me in school. So in high school, we read this book called Nickel and Dimed.
Oh, is that the one by Barbara Ehrenreich?
Yes.
Nice.
That's the one.
That's a good book.
I read this book in high school. It was basically, if you haven't read this book, it's an undercover sort of journalism type of book about living minimum wage in certain jobs. So she goes and tries to live for a few months as a waitress, as a maid in a hotel.
She works at Walmart, doesn't she?
Yes, she also works at Walmart. My mom likes to call it Baby's First Socialism 101 book.
It's true, though.
It's kind of true, because I remember reading this book in school, and I came from a lower class or a working class kind of single parents, and a lot of the kids in my school were upper middle class, mm-hmm. and they both had two parents that, like, had college degrees and worked outside the house, and they were like, how could people live like this? And I'm just sitting here like, dude, this is, like, what my grandmother does. She works at Walmart. Like, mm-hmm. you know, it really woke teenage kids up when I read it in high school, like more than 15 years ago, I think, something like that. Anyways, so this book has been out for at least 20 years. And I feel like this book, Nickel and Dimes, it really does stand the test of time, especially now with all of the class disparity that is going on. And the wealth gap that we are seeing in the society just grows bigger and bigger and bigger. It's a really good idea to hand somebody this book and explain to them, like, if you really, really think that, you know, people who work at Walmart don't need $15 an hour, you should really read this book.
Yeah.
We should have an open discussion about it. Yeah. This book is... I reread it a few years ago. It still holds up. There was a couple things that are a bit outdated, obviously, because the book came out like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
But it still held up. Like, the ideals are there. It stands the test of time. It's an important book for folks to read. The other thing that I remember reading as a kid was, I don't know if any of you did this when you were in grade school or grammar school, but we had to do this thing where we have to recite a poem by memory, and we got graded on it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep, so totally.
One of the first memories I have is freaking out because I had to remember this poem, Stopping by Woods on a Snowy Evening by Robert Frost.
Yep.
And I had this book of Robert Frost poems, and yes, I may have gotten like a 70% about memorized, which is funny because, like, I can remember 90% of the lines in Kevin Smith's Clerks movie almost verbatim. So I don't, anyway, I'm digressing. But that was like one of the first forays into poems when I was growing up. Robert Frost, as most New Englanders know, is... Mm-hmm. A giant in poetry. Even if you're not from New England, you know who Robert Frost is. You know what Stopping by Woods of a Snowy Evening is, at the very least.
I have to interject a story about this because it's so pertinent. I have a friend whose father was her grandfather was a professor in Vermont. And they had a house right near Robert Frost's house. And he was a friend of Robert Frost. When she was a little girl, her grandfather took her to meet Robert Frost, and she took with her a book of his poems and to get him to sign it. She was 7 or 8 years old. And he said, "No, I can't sign that. Not until you can come back and tell me one of those poems by heart."
Oh my God.
He had to go home and memorize one of Robert Frost's poems and go recite it to him from memory. And then he signed her book.
That's so funny. Can you imagine? Like, no big deal. I'm just going to recite your own poem to you. It's fine. No pressure.
Having flashbacks to fourth grade.
Right. He said it was terrifying.
It is.
It was also like he threw down the gauntlet and she was like, "I'm doing it."
Yeah. Oh,
I
yeah.
My book signed.
I want my book signed.
I couldn't imagine trying to recite this poem in front of like one of my teachers in fourth grade. I was freaking out about it. I couldn't imagine trying to do this in front of Robert Frost himself, because right. I don't want to goof up his poetry.
That's so funny. Yeah, apparently my great-grandfather was like buddies with Robert Frost and they would like write poetry together, but I never heard a story like that. That's incredible.
Yeah.
That is, wow. Wow. If I ever become a famous author, I'm totally going to do that. I'm going to be like, "All right, what's your favorite line in my book?"
Oh, you really think terrible. You're a fan?
Terrible. But then I'll be like, "I'm just kidding." And then I'll sign it because I'm not that mean.
So yes, Robert Frost poems, you know, and it's funny because like whenever somebody asks me like I used to do slam poetry back in like when I was in my early 20s and thought I was cool, but apparently I'm not. But my poet friends used to ask me like, who are my influencers or who do I like for poetry? And one of the people that I would bring up is Robert Frost. And they would like dunk on him all the time. Like, why would you want to read poems about like chickens and wheelbarrows and like New Hampshire? It's so like blasé. I'm like, no, you don't understand. Like, I love Robert Frost because it was one of the first, he was one of the first poets, A, that I'd ever read ever, who'd been exposed to that and Donald Hall.
Mm.
And both of them write these poems, just like most of the New England poets that I've read, at least in New Hampshire, because there's a lot of poets in New Hampshire.
Yes.
We have a lot.
Yes.
They write about nature and they write about the salt of the earth kind of people, like mm-hmm. the working people, like the farmers and the people who just appreciate nature and the environment. And when you live up here in the sticks, like the majority of us do, you really understand and gather an appreciation for that, especially at a young age. And that's why I love Robert Frost poems. Stopping by Woods is one of my favorites. I do really like Mending Wall. That one is also a very good poem. Robert Frost poems, definitely, like if you think you're into poetry, you should definitely at the very least read some Robert Frost.
Yeah, and you know what? People say like, "Oh, he's writing about chickens and blah." This one should suit you very well, Kelso, mm-hmm. because of your interest in death and dying. Have you read Home Burial by Robert Frost?
I have. Mm-hmm.
It's too long to read, but it is an amazing poem about a man looking, he's at the bottom of the stairs. He looks up and he sees his wife and she's standing on the stairs, looking out a window out to the hillside at the grave of their dead child.
Mm.
And there's this discussion between him and his wife about, she has to, you know, he's like, you can't stand there looking at that grave. And she's like, you can't tell me anything.
Wow.
That's my baby out there.
Mm.
It is a mind-blowing poem.
Wow.
There was also another book that Donald Hall wrote, I think after his wife, Jane Kenyon, died. And I can't remember what it was about, but it was mostly stories about her Jane's last days.
Isn't it The Painted Bed, something like that?
It might be. But it's so, the way that he writes about Jane in those, in that book, and it is interspersed with some of the poetry about pre-death and then post her death, about living alone in this house in New Hampshire, is just, the grief that you feel in these poems is just so breathtaking. And it was one of the first types of poems that I had read about somebody dying or somebody missing a loved one. And it was so profound. And like, stuff doesn't necessarily make me cry. When I cry, I am not a public crier. I try not to cry in front of anybody. This poem made me openly weep on like the T in Boston one time. Oh. Somebody like looked up at me like, "Are you okay?" And I was like, "It's just the greatest love story between two poets ever. I'll be fine." Oh. And they're like, "Are you all right?" I'm like, "I was just whisked away. That's, I'm okay." Anyways, Robert Frost, please go read some poetry. Like, people need to read more poetry. I feel like a lot of people don't.
Yeah, and I feel like I know that I was definitely one of those people who was like, I'm not super into poetry. You know, I would like read some Robert Frost and like appreciate it because he's very New England-y and, you know, there was like a family connection there. But the first time I actually went out and like bought myself a book of poetry was in college. I saw Buddy Wakefield perform slam poetry, and it was my first introduction to slam poetry, and I was like, oh, I didn't realize it could be like this. And so I do recommend to people who maybe feel like, you know, they have that view that like, oh, poetry is like dry or stuck up or it just doesn't make any sense, go look up slam poets. Go find some slam poets, Buddy Wakefield, Taylor Molly, like just like young, hip slam poets. And like, let that be your intro into poetry because it's way more accessible and it's beautiful and powerful. And especially if you can look up some YouTube videos of them performing it first, and then like you kind of get the rhythm of how it's read. I mean, look at Amanda Gorman,
and her poem is actually going to be published in yes. March.
Yes,
is it like later this month?
I think
or is it in April?
I actually think it's. I think
they moved it up.
When this comes out, it might be out already. The Hill We Climb by Amanda Gorman. If
and
you want.
Go watch her perform because she. She does this stuff with her hands that's just like,
yeah,
it's dance, you know. She does. Oh, I'm trying to imitate her. These
you're going like, full WandaVision on us.
Like flow, but it's yeah. just so beautiful.
Slam poetry is one of those types of performances that it really is. It's physical as well as vocal. And it just, I don't know. I just, as someone who was not into poetry for the longest time, and I still don't really go towards quote unquote traditional poetry. But give me a good slam poet. I am into it. And there are some really beautiful ones out there. So, highly recommend. I'll put a few links in the show notes. I actually might make a shoppable list just for like poetry for people who think they don't like poetry. Mm. because there are some out there that it's like, it will move you. And I see trends happen every once in a while where like one slam poet will sort of become culturally known, and then you see their book sell a bunch and like all these like teenagers are coming in buying it. It's like, yay, poetry. Anyway, I went off on a tangent there, but yay, no, poetry. Okay.
This is what we want yeah. tangents, especially about poetry. And
yeah.
If anybody is ever interested, there is a wonderful performance by young you know, college kids still running. They have open mic nights every Wednesday night. It's virtual now, but we don't have to get into all of the poetry stuff because there is a lot in New Hampshire, but maybe if people ask or if somebody emails us, we can definitely give them links to like the slam poetry people in New Hampshire and, you know, the New Hampshire poet network that we used to have, the Poet Society of New Hampshire. We do a lot of stuff with them. Moving on, I apologize. So the other two books, especially in the most recent years, I've been reading a lot of was, I read a lot of technology is trying to kill us and like turn us all into meat zombie books. I started reading a couple of years ago, Jaron Lanier's 10 Reasons Why You Should Delete Your Social Media Accounts Right Now. It's still like on my nightstand. I can see it. My wife is reading it right now. We have dog-eared, highlighted, goofed up, annotated our copy. Love Jaron Lanier's book. We also, Michael had given me You Are Not a Gadget by Jaron Lanier as well after I had read that book. I deleted my social media accounts for exactly 3 months and then I decided to come back because the poll is just so great. I do read a lot of books about how technology, especially social media, is scary accurate and could be possibly dangerous and other things that we've all now can see what has happened. But one of the things I like to read are like books about how we can reduce or get rid of our social medias or be off of our phones and be less connected from our phones. One of the best books I like to give people, especially in the new year, this is a very big New Year's book. It's called 24/6, Giving Up Screens One Day a Week to Get More Time, Creativity, and Connection by Tiffany Shallon. Tiffany explains in this book what she does, which is called a tech Sabbath. She's been doing this for over 14 years and counting. She describes going offline with her family one day a week, which improves her life and reconnects with the world around her. The best thing I like about this book is that she describes why she's doing it. She describes why technology is bad and we should like unprogram ourselves from it, of course. But my favorite thing about this book is that it's very much a how-to, like how to start slowly kind of pulling yourself away little by little, even if it's for an hour out of your weekend or a 24-hour period or the whole weekend without your phones or the internet or email or whatever you do in front of TV. Like she shuts off the TV. Like nobody, none of her kids watch the TV during this, you know, 24 hours of this tech Sabbath. But the ways she talks about them in her how-to book are very practical. You know, buying a landline, which is like $10 a month. Doesn't everybody remember what a landline is? Like, that's kind of neat. You know, there are these other, you don't have to put on like these time saving gadgets because you're still going to look at your phone. Like, you put your phone away, you shut your battery off, you shut it off, you put it in a drawer. She gives advice as to when it's okay to use your phone, when it is okay to not use your phone. Don't pull out, you know, buy a map when you go out, you know, and she gives us other things on how to have your family do it with you, especially young kids or older kids who are constantly on our phone. She gives us practical advice of like, go take a walk or go have a picnic or, you know, do other, you know, go see a sporting event, do something else, be off of your phone.
Sporting event? What?
Well, pre-COVID.
Sorry. Yes, this book was written pre-COVID. So maybe not a sporting event right now. Maybe like your kid's high school basketball, 6 feet away from each other with masks on, like we have been doing for my child. Pretty soon we will have sporting events again, but until then, Anyway, so
that's really interesting.
Yeah, I really like this book. I like to give it to customers who are kind of like, I'm getting really fatigued with my phone, or it's a brand new year and I want to do something where I'm spending more time with my family or reconnecting with people around me that's not on my phone, or at least the people in my pod, because we are in COVID. It's a good how-to on how to give yourself a baby step to digital detox. It's very easy to read. It's very digestible. It's a lot easier to read and digest rather than like the techiness of Jaron Lanier's books. Mm-hmm. He can get kind of like computer geeky. Mm-hmm. And he's very in depth in his books. And there are times where I have to stop and go, I don't understand, what's an algorithm to my wife? And my wife is just like, you dummy. But she's got a degree in, you know, technology. So she's right. Smarter than I am. Anyway, so 24/6, excellent book. We should
make a display of, like, you know, get off your phone type books, where we have like 24/6, we have Jaron Lanier, we sell that cell phone jail. Have you seen that we
yeah.
sell? Where like you literally like put your phone in a jail cell and like set a timer and you can't open it until the timer goes off. And then like, see, you read all the nonfiction, like here's why you should get off your phone. And I'm over here reading all the scary fiction books about how technology, you know, takes over this, like civilization is really scary. But I'm over here like, I don't know, that's kind of cool tech. I'm like kind of into it. It's like, I read like, you know, Zed or right. What was the, was it Dave Eggers? No.
The Circle?
Yeah, The Circle.
Yeah, that's Dave Eggers.
And I was like, I don't know, this is kind of cool actually. But like we should do a display of like all of the like fiction and nonfiction and the little cell phone jails and just be like, maybe get off your phone.
I can't, like, whenever I watch Black Mirror, I just like, I can't handle it. I just can't, like, no, why? No, just like, I want to break my phone every time. Like, stop.
Oh God. And I'm over here like, I would be okay with some of this. I mean, not all of the Black Mirror episodes, but some of them I'm like, I don't know, that's kind of cool. I could see myself enjoying that. Yeah. So I probably need to read more of the nonfiction that's like, okay, you need a break, especially as the social media person for the store. Like, I'm never not on my phone.
Right. Like, see, that's the thing. There's a reason for it. And it's really hard to, like, for me, I'm not the social media person in the store, but like I do this thing most of the time during the weekends where like I lock my phone in a drawer and go like take a walk for an hour or read a book. And that's kind of the thing that I do. But yeah, if I could just smash my phone and like go walk in the woods, like Stranger in the Woods, that book, like became a hermit for like 15 years and no one found him. Yes. That's what I want to do. But you know, that's why I live in New England.
You don't want to do that. Then you live by breaking into people's camps and stealing their popcorn.
That's
and,
true. You know. I wouldn't want it. I don't want to break in anybody's places, but I just leave me alone. I don't want to need to be on this hex site. Anyways, I have two more books and I promise I'll stop. The other thing I've been mostly reading right now is biographies of our founding fathers. It started with Michael giving me a book about the Marquis de Lafayette. Nice. It's called Lafayette in the Somewhat United States by Sarah Vowell.
Yes. I haven't read that, but I really want to.
I've never read any of Sarah's work. I love the way Michael handed me this book. He goes, so have you seen The Incredibles? And I went, yes. He goes, yeah. So this woman, she voiced a character in The Incredibles. You should read this book. She's really funny. Thanks, Michael. Oh my God. Okay.
That's amazing. So, what a great book pitch.
Right? I'm like,
that's how you hand sell.
Sure. That's like, That's great. What's the book about? It's about its history. Just read it. She's very funny. Okay. And he was correct. Every time Michael recommends me a book, he always gives me winners.
Yeah.
He's freaking hilarious. I learned a lot about Marquis de Lafayette, but I also started trying to figure out other books that I might be interested in reading. I picked up a book last week called You Never Forget Your First, a biography of George Washington by Alexis Coe. This recently came out in paperback. It is a, like it states, a biography about George Washington. It's only 250 pages long, which is great. And it's funny because she talks about how the majority of his biography, George Washington's biography, has been written by old white men. She calls these people the thigh guys because they are very intricately detailed about George Washington's thighs in most of these guys' biographies about George Washington, which I thought was funny. And it's kind of almost a feminist take on George Washington's life. She talks about the relationship between George Washington and his mom, which a lot of people who have written about George Washington, they talk about her mom, his mom, as like a kind of shrewd woman. She's really mean and nasty, when in fact, she really wasn't. And George Washington didn't have like a torrid, awful relationship with his mom. He just like puts up with her shenanigans when he needs to. He never really talked about it. She talks about, you know, his life. And one of my favorite parts is she talks about how he he went out and he fought all of these wars, and he only won maybe a small handful of battles as the general of the, you know, the first United States Army. And then she writes about, towards the end of his life, she writes about his greatest hypocrisy is what to do with all the hundreds of men, women, and children he owns before he succumbs to his death at the age of mid-60s. It is a really interesting take. It's very digestible. It's not as funny as Sarah. However, it's a really good foray if you want to jump into biographies, especially biographies of man with men like George Washington. And the last book, and then I'll be done, I promise, is called Meet Me in the Bathroom, The Rebirth of Rock and Roll in New York City from 2001 to 2011 by Lizzie Goodman. This book is a chonkin book. It's about 640 pages. It is about the rebirth of the New York rock scene in the new millennium. It is written by a very prominent music journalist. Her name is Lizzie Goodman. The book is named after a Stroke song that I really liked, and that was the only reason why I picked it up like 3 years ago.
Fair enough.
It's a really good book. So it talks about the dying breed of old music industry with CDs and whatnot, and it goes into the post 9/11 New York music scene with influences with Napster and digital music and downloading music. But she also talks to a lot of these really prominent musical artists of the time, the Strokes, the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, LCD Sound System, Vampire Weekend. And these are all bands that really came around during my formative years. Because in 2001, I was 12. Mm-hmm. 12, 13. And so that's the start of like junior high for me, all the way up to 2011, which was me in college. And so it's fun to read about all of these bands that really like founded my life in such a seminal time frame. So bands that you enjoyed in high school and in college, you don't really think about as like rock movements until you are in your 30s or 40s and you're reading 640 page novels about this music that you grew up with and went, yeah, I remember I was at that Strokes concert. Oh my God, they're talking about the Yeah Yeah Yeahs concert that I wanted to go see, but I couldn't. And it's just, it's really funny to read about this rebirth of music that you lived through as a young kid. And it's just, it's really good. And I'm usually not a music biography person, but I feel like a lot of my friends who grew up in the same era as me, who are like super into music, would really like Meet Me in the Bathroom. Nice. So yeah, those are my big old stack of nonfiction books. So it's, I think, Hillary's turn.
Yeah, Hillary, what do you got for us? You're our nonfiction expert, I feel like.
Well, I'll tell you, these are the ones I'm reading right now. I do read a lot of nonfiction, and then I forget all the nonfiction that I've read. Yeah. So I'm going to leave a ton of really great stuff out. This is just what I have floating around right now that I think that I'm really enjoying, and they're books that are available now at the store. Yeah. This one, Wonder Works by Angus Fletcher, just came out a couple weeks ago. The subtitle is The 25 Most Powerful Inventions in the History of Literature. So it's about literary devices and how they were invented and how they work. So I'll just read a few of the chapter headings. Chapter one, Rally Your Courage. Homer's Iliad and the Invention of the Almighty Heart. Mm-hmm. Chapter two, Rekindle the Romance, Sappho's Lyrics, the Odes of Eastern Jew and the Invention of the Secret Discloser. Mm-hmm. Chapter three, Exit Anger, the Book of Job, Sophocles' Oedipus Tyrannus and the Invention of the Empathy Generator. Wow. Chapter four, Float Above Hurt, Aesop's Fables, Plato's Meno, and the Invention of the Serenity Elevator. So he's, you know, talking about all of these, starting way, way, way back when and coming all the way up to the present time. So for example, he gets chapter 21, Decide Wiser, Ursula Le Guin's The Left Hand of Darkness, Thomas More's Utopia, Jonathan Swift's Gulliver's Travels, and the Invention of the Double Alien. Yeah, it's very, so the final chapter, let's see, is, oh no, chapter 24, this will clue you into how it really comes right up to the moment. Live Your Dream, Tina Fey's 30 Rock, mm-hmm. A Dash of Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, and the Invention of the Wish Triumphant. So, you know, if you've done a lot of reading, you're into culture, you're into the history of literature, this is a really interesting take on how literature works. So it's like a nice puzzly, thinky book that also it's written in a way the chapters are short. It's the kind of thing where you could pick it up and read at any, you could start in the middle, you know, just choose one of the chapter titles that interests you or that is about a work of art that you're interested in and mm-hmm. and read his take on it. So I've just read a little bit of this so far. I'm really enjoying it.
Nice.
This one is kind of esoteric. I ordered this in. We didn't have it in. I ordered it in, but we should maybe order more in because I'm liking this book a lot for this moment in time. And the reason I ordered it is I heard the author, Jack Balkin, being interviewed on some smart political podcast. And, you know, we were all in that moment where it was like, oh my God, it's the end of democracy. January 6th has happened. Like, we are about to fall to fascism. Mm-hmm. We're done. You know, the country's over. And this guy, Jack Balkin, who is a Knight Professor of Constitutional Law and the First Amendment at Yale Law School, and the founder and director of Yale's Information Society Project. Okay, so he's no dope. He works at Yale. He's well known. He's like, no, just hold your horses. We have been through this again and again and again. This is cyclical. It's mm-hmm. called The Cycles of Constitutional Time by Jack M. Balkin. And it is, it's the most soothing, smart book. He takes us back to the beginning of our Constitution and shows how again and again and again there are forces that don't like democracy and try to counter it. You know, they try to keep people from voting. We had slavery, for God's sakes, when we started, right? You know, we've come a long way. And he sort of says, okay, we're progressing. We make 5 steps back, but then we make 6 steps forward. Mm-hmm. So I really enjoyed this book. I haven't finished it yet, but it's calming me down a lot. And here I have another cycle book, which is also calming me down a lot. It's called The Plague Cycle. The Unending War Between Humanity and Infectious Disease by Charles Kenny. And I know you're probably thinking, oh my God, are you insane? Who wants to read more about coronavirus? This book, if you think we've had it bad for the past year, you have another think coming. Read this book and you will find out about plagues that did kill 95% of the people who were living on the planet at that moment. Like, we have been through way, 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 way worse than what we're going through right now. So this book is also very soothing in its way. It takes us back to the beginning of human history, even before human history, where he can look at genetic evidence and see that we have our genes have changed because of attacks of diseases, prehistoric. Wow. Attacks of diseases. And it also talks about COVID, but it is a very smart, fascinating book that will really make you feel like, oh, we'll get through this. The Plague Cycle by Charles Kenny. And then something that will really draw me to a nonfiction book is a wonderfully illustrated book. Mm. And I'm a big gardener, and a customer ordered this book and was picking it up. And I took one look at the cover and said, oh my God, I need that book. It's called Adventures in Eden. Mm-hmm. By Carolyn Mullett. So this book is not about the words, although the little essays are good. It's about these amazing photographs of some of the most beautiful gardens in Europe. The woman who wrote this has a business, I'm sure it's not really happening right now, where she arranges for people to go and see private gardens in Europe that are not normally open to the public. If you're a gardener, and a lot of us became gardeners in the last year, I think.
Yeah.
If you just want like an armchair trip to a beautiful place, this book is absolutely gorgeous. It's not inexpensive. It's a $40 book. Bring in your 20% off certificate and or come to one of our sales. But it's if you have a gardener in your life that loves beautiful books, Adventures in Eden by Carolyn Mullett, just gorgeous, inspiring, beautiful book. And then I was just saying to Ryan, I've been kind of binging Hannibal as I've been working out on my elliptical, you know, because it's one of those things where you can't stop looking at it. So you forget that you're sweating and panting.
Yeah.
And I was shelving a book the other day in true crime, and I found this book called Murder Maps, Crime Scenes Revisited. It's the subtitle is Phrenology to Fingerprint, 1811 to 1911 by Dr. Drew Gray. It is, it's about murders all over the world in one century at a time when there were big changes being made in the way crimes were investigated and photography became used in crime scenes. So there are all these horrific photographs of, you know, people who've been bludgeoned to death. So there's everything from Jack the Ripper to, you know, just like old lady, you know, Cisco, who was found bashed on her head in her bistro, probably because some guy wanted to steal 10 cents from her, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it is full of these great illustrations, great maps, and all of this archival stuff from newspapers of the time. So it is very much a book about a century and what people were like, and you know, the kind of like the grifters of the era, and that, you know, these are definitely people who are killing people, but they're also people who were like stealing from people and taking on false personas and wearing fake mustaches. And it's just very beautifully put together, very cool book. If you're into true crime, Murder Maps, Crime Scenes Revisited by Dr. Drew Gray. Really lovely, weird book for just for the true crime person in your life. So those are mine.
That's awesome. I want to mention, I asked John, our coworker, who he reads a lot of nonfiction. He reads a lot of history. He's our history guy. And he recommended Land by Simon Winchester.
Oh, right. And we have a video with him, don't we?
We do. So John actually was the In Conversation partner when we had an event with Simon Winchester. And we have that recording of that event is up on our YouTube channel. The link is on our website. We have a link for past event recordings, and that's one of them. So definitely go check that out. But yeah, I just had to give John a shout out because we were chatting about nonfiction before I left work the other day. So this was great. I hope that some of our listeners who are itching for something other than fiction maybe found some good recommendations in there. And of course, like, if history or bios or whatever aren't your thing, like, you know, there's also humor books, right? Like, there, you know, read some David Sedaris, read some Ali Broch. Like, there's, you know, poetry, which we talked about. There's science books. There's cookbooks. You know, I like nonfiction. Sometimes people will come into the store and say, where's your nonfiction section? Our nonfiction section is everything except the wall of fiction. Like, there's
most of the store.
It's most of the store. There are so many amazing books out there that count under the nonfiction umbrella. So even if you think, I'm not a nonfiction reader. I don't like to read nonfiction, which I often say to myself, you know, check yourself, because yeah, it's probably not true. you probably do like some nonfiction. You just don't think about it. I never think about it because I'm always hand selling, you know, whatever novel I've just finished. And I'd be curious for our listeners to give us a shout what your favorite nonfiction book is. One of my friends, Corrigan, responded to my tweet asking for nonfiction recommendations. And she mentioned a book and tagged the author. And she mentioned that she had, she was always giving this book away to people and had lost her copy, like it had just never come back to her, and the author was like, I'll send you one.
What was the book?
Let me pull it up. So she was talking about this book. It's called A Good War Is Hard to Find by David Griffith. And she said, I passed it around to friend after friend until it eventually got lost in the passing. For former Christian school kids who always felt uncomfortable with being taught blind hawkishness in the name of patriotism, it hit. And he just was like, oh my God, I'm so honored. Like, send me a message. I'll send you a copy. And I just was like, book people are the best people. I just thought that was so much fun. But anyway, I digress. I want to shout out again our events. We are still going strong with our virtual events. We've had a lot of really fun ones recently, and we've got some really good ones coming up. We've got David Elliott
happening exciting.
Soon. That may be out by the time this goes up. Is that a March event or is that
March 16th? I think
March 16th. That will have already happened by the time this goes up. So, go watch the recording of that. We love David Elliott. He was the first interview for The Laydown. Very early on in our first season, he and I sat down and chatted about Bull and voices and all kinds of good stuff. So he's fantastic. But yeah, so lots of amazing virtual events happening. So check out our website for all of that. Just, you know, again, shouting out Libero FM, who is kind enough to sponsor us. We have a coupon code with them. If you are new to Libero FM, if you're switching over to Libero FM, you're jumping into the audiobook game, when you are making your account at checkout, put in the code LAYDOWN and you'll get 3 audiobook credits for the price of 1. So it's a great deal. We love them. Please support them because they support us.
Can I mention our book club that's coming up?
Yes. What are we reading in
April 5th, I believe it is, at 5:30 on Zoom. Be there or be square. And if you want to come to the book club, you don't ever have to have come to another book club. You can come to this one and never come to another one. You just go to our website and you click on the link and you get an email that gives you a Zoom registration, and it's super simple to do. And this time it's nonfiction. We are reading Natasha Trethewey's memoir about her mother's murder. It's called Memorial Drive, and it is really something. It's not long, which is good because it's quite an intense book. But it also has this lovely kind of coda at the end of it. It's really worth reading it until the final pages because there's a fascinating little twist that happens in this very, very, very sad story. A really interesting related thing happens many, many years after her mother is killed by her stepfather. Wow. But it's definitely... A story for the moment. You know, it's a story about a Black woman in the South who is being abused and the police are just not taking it seriously enough. And she winds up dying.
Wow.
But it's about the repercussions on her entire family. Mm. But a beautiful memoir.
Yeah.
So Memorial Drive by Natasha Trethewey is our next book.
That's going to be excellent. Cool. All right. So you can email us about the podcast at thelaydownpodcast@gmail.com. Our website is gibsonsbookstore.com, and we're also on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And we'll put those links in the show notes along with all of the books that were mentioned during this episode. Thank you all so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll know when we upload our next episode, and consider leaving us a nice review. Until next time, we'll see you in the stacks. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.